What's up, guys? It's Matt and Leslie at Table 40. And today, the special guest is Matt and Leslie. We've decided to take today as an opportunity in this podcast to tell a little bit about our story. As we transition into kind of our next phase of podcasts, we weren't sure we'd make it this far. But people apparently are still listening, so we're going to keep making them. But we're going to transition into kind of our next phase, which will be kind of a baseball postseason type of hopefully to interview some former teammates and people that took part in some of the postseasons that we were lucky enough to be part of, and kind of go into some in-depth stories behind some of those seasons and some of those teams. So we thought today would be a good day for Leslie and I to share a little bit about our journey in baseball and how we met and kind of some of the things that we ask our guests. We thought it might be cool to give our sort of answers to some of those questions and see if anybody cares. But I've had the chance to be on some podcasts lately, Leslie, as you know, and I've noticed how much more professional they are, and they actually have setups. And so ours is not that professional. I've noticed that. We'll try to pick it up, I think, as we've got some new equipment that we're playing with, and that hopefully maybe our professionalism will pick up a notch, or maybe the people that listen don't like it, don't like professional podcasts. So we're giving them what they want. So, all right. Well, what do you got? You got any questions to start us out with to get us moving?
Well, I think the one thing that we ask people every single time is, or the couples that we have on there every time, is how did you guys meet? And it's my favorite question to ask, because I think that it kind of sets up the foundation for who they are as a couple and where they've been. And I think a lot of people know that we met on a blind date, and it was truly a blind date because there wasn't Instagram or Facebook or any of those things. And so it was absolutely a blind date, and it was fantastic. We met, went to a movie.
I mean, you're skipping some of the parts where you kind of blew me off. So when we finally got to the date, it was great. But early on, we had planned to go to a couple different things that you decided last minute weren't going to happen.
You know, that's the disadvantage of not being in the day and age of Instagram. I'll be honest with you.
If would you have Instagram messaged me?
That 100%. I would have gone. I would have gone 100%. If I would have seen, I mean.
If I'd have had a kissy lips picture, you'd have.
Yeah, no, it was, I think what really, I mean, I feel a little deceived because you had this amazing hair. And it was really like, I mean, it's a true story. And so when I very first saw you, I thought, oh my gosh, that guy has like amazing hair, great smile, beautiful blue eyes. I mean, you passed the eye test for sure when I very first met you. So I would have, if Instagram was around, I would have jumped right on the opportunity to date a young Matt Holliday. I mean, very good looking
guy.
Did
you look for the shape of my head knowing that someday that I would have to be shaved in the flow?
No, I did not. But anyway. So whatever, we met on a blind date. We went to a movie, and
I don't even remember what movie it was, and neither do you.
No, but it was awesome. It
must have been great.
Great conversation though. Dropped me off at the Pi-Fi house at Oklahoma State, and we sat and visited for a really long time, and then we just never stopped dating. So it's a good story, one that I'm sure a lot of people have already heard, but because we get asked that question a lot too. But I think the reason that I like to ask that question is, like I said earlier, it kind of lays the foundation for the relationship between Matt and Leslie, and between the couples that we've talked to over our short time as being podcast hosts. And I think just like a practical thing, I wish that people would start asking that question. If they're going to pursue Christianity, I wish that they would ask that question about God. It's like, get really serious about reading the beginning of the Bible and meeting who God is, because I think that the foundation of who God is and the foundation of who Jesus is, if we really start to understand that stuff, we'll read the rest of the Bible a little bit better and a little clearer. There's this old theologian, his name's N.T. Wright. He's a really smart guy. And he said something that I thought was really cool the other day. I was listening to a lecture, and he said that if we read Jesus well and read God well, then it's going to help us understand how to interpret the rest of the Bible. And I think that that's really, really important. And I think that what we think about God and what we think about Jesus really matters, and it helps us understand kind of the harder things that we read in Scripture. And so what do you think about that? Do you think that's good advice?
Do you think people avoid the beginning of the Bible and like really diving in because they see it more like a fairy tale and like a little kid book? Or I guess they don't, it doesn't seem as serious as it really is, because I guess you learned about it as a kid in like a book where the snake was like this little fictional snake and the apple was just kind of like this drawing. And it was just, I think that people sometimes look at the Old Testament more as like a kind of just a kid's book, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's how you're exposed to, I think, God and the garden and the beginning. At least, I think for me, like those children's books. And the Old Testament can be somewhat, I think people look at it as old and kind of useless and not interesting. And some of the books are tough, to be honest. There's some of them that are tough to get through. But a lot of them, I think, are like action movies. And I think people look at it like I said, like an old story, like a kid's story. But when you look at it and you start to read some of those Old Testament books, it reads more like kind of some pretty R-rated stuff. And I just think it's interesting that when you go back to the beginning and you kind of, and I thought even the Bible series that was years ago that they did was pretty good at kind of illustrating some of the, I guess, just the exciting and kind of intense stories that are in the New or the Old Testament that maybe people should give a chance to. But yeah, I mean, I think that when you look back at the beginning of things, it kind of sets the stage for, it's fun to look back, I guess, when you're, 20 years into marriage, to even look back at our story and all the growth and the learning and all the things that you look back at young Matt and Leslie and you think, God, they had no idea what they're doing,
or did they really know each other when they walked down the aisle?
Yeah. I mean, their honeymoon, they probably thought, I really don't know her that well, or I don't know him that well, but we were together a solid 2 years. But, yeah, now looking back 20 years later, it's funny to think about.
It is funny to think about. And like we talked about before we hit record, I mean, you think about God's faithfulness, and there is a story in the Old Testament, and I don't know exactly what book it's in. I don't remember, but it talks about like laying these stones of remembrance stones and remember God's faithfulness as you walk across the water was the kind of the context of it. And I think that is, we can really apply that to our lives today. When we do look back at the beginning of a story, whether it's a blind date story and kind of an awkward start to a relationship, or we look at the beginning of scripture where we just see, man, God created this whole thing out of nothing. And you were on his mind. I was on his mind at the beginning. And I think that just the power and the precision and the intention that God creates and restores and redeems is just so fascinating to me as I've grown in my faith. But as I look back on our story, 22 years ago, right? It's incredible that the same theme is true, like God's power and God's precision and God's just intention in our lives. When we look back on that, I can think of many instances in my mind where we can put down those remembrance stones, mm-hmm. so to speak, where we can look back on how faithful the Lord has been through friendships and through great times and through struggles. I mean, I think our story is peppered with a lot of things over the years. And so let's talk about your career real quick. I mean, you played a long time, but so we're not going to just spend hours on this topic, but let's talk about your career real quick. You were drafted by the Rockies. I wasn't there for that. So let's roll through that real fast. You're what, 18 years old?
Yeah. So at 18, I thought, at 18, I'd been recruited heavily in football and baseball, probably more so in football, just because at the time the big business of football and recruiting was just, I think, so far ahead of what baseball was. And now baseball's caught up with all the perfect game and the PBR and all the rankings and all those things. So at the time, football was doing all the rankings and had everything. You were ranked certain five-star or whatever. And so football, I got a lot more recruiting attention. I played on the USA baseball team too. And so I had a lot of cool experiences as a high school kid. I remember even at 16, which now looking back, with Jackson being 16, my parents let me go to Panama with the USA team. and so Actually, Brazil. This time it was Brazil. So I was in Sao Paulo, Brazil as a 16-year-old and playing baseball with a bunch of kids I didn't know at all, living in a dorm at a Brazilian college that was about the size of a bathroom. So I remember thinking, and then we went down for breakfast and was starving, and it was a buffet. And as a 16-year-old, you're always hungry. And I remember grabbing a big scoop of it, and nothing tasted like it was supposed to. And so I was like, what am I going to eat while I'm in Brazil? Like, their food was just so much different than a 16-year-old's used to. So we ate a lot of ice cream in Brazil because it tasted like ice cream from America. So just looking back, like even that, like experiences that, so I was in Brazil and that was like the right before I think my junior year. So football could start recruiting that year, right when we were in Brazil. So I got calls in the middle of the night in Brazil from football coaches, from Notre Dame and a few other colleges, expressing their interest. And somehow they had the number to this, college in Brazil, and as the phone rang on the house phone, because I don't think I even had a cell phone then.
No way, you wouldn't.
But anyway, so that's kind of how it started with high school. It was just kind of trying to figure out whether I was going to play football or baseball. And my dad was coaching here at Oklahoma State, and my brother was a junior about to be a senior when I got drafted. And at the time, I thought he would sign, that he would be drafted and that he would be moved on, and I wouldn't get a chance to play with him if I had come to school. So just trying to make that decision, and I wasn't far enough along in my faith to say that I just really prayed about this decision. I probably rode this decision more emotionally as a kid than anything mature and really trusting in the Lord that he would guide me on the right path. So I probably rode that and thought about things much more from a worldly emotional standpoint than I would hope a 40-year-old version of me would have. But I always wanted to be a baseball player as a kid, and when the opportunity came and the financially it was enough where my dad sort of gave me the blessing that he was okay with it, that was the route I wanted to pursue, and for a lot of different reasons. But I think it was a little overwhelming to think about playing football and baseball. And in baseball, I was going to play probably third and pitch or outfield and pitch, and school and all the things that I was facing. So it was a bit of a daunting thought, and that was part of the, in wanting to pursue being a pro. So ended up signing with the Rockies in the seventh round, and they pretty much throw you right to the wolves. So just fly into Tucson, Arizona. Somebody picks you up in a white van.
creepy white van.
They drop you off at a creepy Holiday Inn
right next to that market that sold off Oakley.
It was a swap meet, yeah. Right next to a swap meet, and none of us had cars, and it was a billion degrees. It was, so I think it was July maybe in Tucson. I don't know if anybody's been to Tucson in July, but it was about, we played our games at 10 o'clock in the morning because it was so hot. But basically dropped off and with one bag and a few bats and with a bunch of other kids that were 18 to 21 years old that had just been drafted in a hotel and didn't know any of them. And there you go. You just try to figure it out. You just the next day you're literally early work is at 6:30 in the morning and the game starts at 10. You're done by 1:30 with nothing to do, stuck in a hotel room. And thankfully I made a lot of really good friends and guys that I still can call friends today. Kind of helped you through that homesick, kind of figuring out what am I doing and what a worldly game it is. I think it punches you right in the face. You go from I'd had more experience probably than most with some worldly games and travel. But I think when you step into the competition of knowing that all these kids from all over the world, from the Dominican to Venezuela to Puerto Rico to Panama, all on this one team, and you see the talent, it's a little overwhelming. And I remember thinking, did I make the right decision? And that was probably the first time I thought that of many. And I think that's part of the grind and the hardness of the minor league baseball. So that was kind of the beginning of 18-year-old me that kind of trying to figure out if I made the right decision or not, so that was kind of how it started.
Yeah, and we met shortly after that first year.
Yeah.
And then we dated a year and we got married. Or no, we dated a year, we were engaged a year, and then got married. So you were in the minor leagues during that experience as well. And I think what was really funny, I get asked this question a lot, like, where did you guys go on your honeymoon? What was that like? And I think that's such a fun story because we get married December 30th and it was snowing. And our honeymoon was on the way to a winter development camp, remember? And Juan, Pierre, and his new wife were supposed to be our roommates. So that was going to be the honeymoon suite, right, with the holidays and the Pierre's newlyweds. So anyway, one of my favorite memories, Matt, of when we first got married, the wedding was great. Janice and Steve put on a good show. It was awesome. And I loved our wedding. It was very special. But we get married, and we get near Tahoe, and it's freezing cold, and we're leaving Oklahoma to start our life as a young couple. And our very first meal, do you remember what our very first meal was?
Yeah, I remember that we had to take a bit of a detour. We had to go south to go north because the weather was so bad.
It was so bad.
North that we had to go kind of a different route. But yeah, I remember the truck stop where we had buffalo burgers and cottage cheese.
Yeah, it did. Buffalo burgers and cottage cheese. Every time.
We were still trying to eat healthy even then.
Yeah, so I mean, we did. Cherokee Trading Stop, buffalo burgers and cottage cheese. Mm-hmm. Then we went to Colorado Springs, spent a night in a hotel. I was a legal drinker. You were not. It felt very awkward because it's a very nice hotel. And we felt like we didn't belong.
Like they were looking for our parents.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt. They were looking for our parents and we really shouldn't be here. And so we leave the next day and we go to the Winter Development Program. And then we ended up having a host family, Kurt and Tammy Wells. And that was our first home. We lived in a basement with the sweetest family in the world for a lot of months. And that was our
first
home.
Yeah, I think that was sort of the start of the adversity too, because I had a foot surgery.
You got pneumonia, foot surgeries.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I had a foot surgery that ended up getting infected, which was a disaster. I had pneumonia, which was really probably pretty bad pneumonia. I remember feeling really, really terrible. All in the basement of these nice people that were nice enough to let us continue our stay because of all the medical ailments I had going on. But yeah, they were... That was an interesting way to start a marriage, was in the basement of people that were, at the time, strangers, became friends, and introduced us to the city of Denver, which I think was just such a cool program. And still to this day, I don't know that they do that anymore, and probably for sure don't with COVID right now, but was really a cool program where the Rockies brought all their young minor league players in for a month to work out and to kind of get acclimated to the city and the ballpark, so that someday if they ever did get called up, they'd be a lot more comfortable in their setting.
Yeah, and let's talk about the Rockies real quick because we're never going to get through this podcast. Yeah, you played a really long time.
Early.
We need to hit the gas on this deal. So you get to the big leagues with the Rockies. We have a little Jackson at the time, so it's been 5 years in the minor leagues. We had Jackson when we were fairly young too. We get married 20 and 21. Mm-hmm. Have Jax 23, 24. And you get to the big leagues. And so you're with the Rockies. I guess we'll go ahead. I mean, you get the phone call that you're going to make it to the major leagues. You call your wife. You think she's going to answer the phone. I don't answer the phone because I'm watching The Bachelor.
Yeah, I was so excited.
Did that hurt your feelings?
I was so excited, obviously, as a kid. And there was times in the minor leagues where I thought that day would never come. I mean, there's just so much frustration and struggle in the minor leagues. There's plenty of nights where you go, man, this is not going to happen, and I probably should go try football again. But yeah, so when that call comes, it wasn't a huge, I guess, out of nowhere surprise because I'd had a really good spring training and thought I might make the team out of spring training. But I guess the realization when that call comes in that you're actually going to be in the major leagues and you get to put on a major league uniform and as a kid who grew up in a baseball family, was pretty excited. So I couldn't wait to call my wife and really just first call straight to her. You know, she's going to be so excited, and didn't answer. Keep calling. I don't know what's going on. No answer. So I finally called my parents, I think, and then I may even have called Josh. I may even have got Josh in there and my parents before you. And then finally you call me back and you're like, my goodness, what in the world is going on? I'm trying to watch The Bachelor. And I'm thinking, really? And then So you were watching The Bachelor and missed out on that moment and crushed me forever.
I did.
Oh.
And then it got worse because then your major league debut happens and I don't go to it because I was afraid to fly.
Okay.
So I made up an excuse because I didn't want you to know that I was afraid to fly. So I don't remember exactly what I told you. I probably had something to do with Jackson because that would have seemed like a valid excuse. But I was afraid to fly, so I missed your debut with the Cardinals, ironically. But I think I got better. Like, I got to be a little bit better of a supportive baseball wife over the years. But I'm sorry about both of those things.
Yeah, it's
I've
okay.
talked about it. Yeah.
We'll
All
calm
right.
down.
So the Rockies experience, like overall, I would say that was a ball. Would you agree?
No, it was great. I think that the part about the Rockies experience was my favorite was is that you grind through 5 years of minor leagues with a lot of those guys. You sort of grow up with them. Those are kind of the formidable years for us. It really, I'm not sure this is always the case, but a lot of those guys were signed at similar ages and kind of grew up together, and it was almost like a college experience from my standpoint, as far as just, got a bunch of guys in the same place in their life trying to figure out, who they were and grinding and just trying to, from a personal standpoint to a professional standpoint, trying to get reach a goal. And I think that, making it to the major leagues with the Rockies, and then a lot of those guys that you play the minor leagues with kind of came to the major leagues around the same time, and we ended up were able to have, the 2007, which was such a special run together. But yeah, that was a great, I guess, team, city. And then it kind of culminated with 2007 and going to the World Series, and just kind of how the city. I remember our little townhouse in Stapleton, and just the buzz in the city,
Yeah, that's fun.
in the playoffs and leading up to the playoffs, and just kind of the excitement in downtown Denver. And that whole postseason was so fun. Just every night, you just couldn't wait to get to the park the next day and feel that energy. And there was people having Rockies parties, it felt like, everywhere in Stapleton. And it was that was really, really fun experience in 2007 until the World Series. But leading up to the World Series, lots of fun. And like you said, the whole family dynamic of coming up with a bunch of people that you grinded through the minor leagues with created a really cool environment.
Yeah, and as far as our faith went, I think as a couple, we were really starting to grow, and I think that it's fair to say that Jesus was starting to matter to us more and more, and stepping into spaces in our life, in bigger ways, right? It became I remember we had a pastor named Russ McKendry that we were both very fond of, and we learned a lot and grew a lot in Colorado. And I remember Inger and Brad Andrus were the chapel leaders at the time. And she pushed me to be more of a leader as a young girl in the Rockies organization, and I really appreciate that now looking back on that. She asked me to lead a couple Bible studies, and I remember the very first one I led. I just remember after everyone left, I thought to myself, man, this is something I really want to do again because I enjoy talking about Jesus, and I enjoy just being with girls as they are kind of navigating this lifestyle. And it started a passion in me to want to learn more about the Lord. And I think Colorado's where that started, to where I started to have this passion towards baseball and the families in baseball. I think that's the one thing that, looking back on our time in Colorado, I became very interested in other people's lives and very interested in how God works in other people's lives and how I could communicate that. And I'm very appreciative of our time in Colorado and looking back on the faithfulness of the Lord with the pastors and the friendships. And I mean, good grief, Matt. We met Lindsay and Josh Bard and Christy and Jay Jones and Russ McKendry, who I just mentioned earlier, and Leah and Seth Taylor. And the list is long of people that have shaped our perspective on who God is, who Jesus is, and then who we are, in light of the bigness of God. And so Colorado was real important, to my faith journey for sure. So
Yeah, I remember a lot of cool Bible studies we had. Bill Rader was our chaplain, and we had a lot of guys that came to our Bible studies, to his little office back behind the locker room in Colorado, and Jamie Carroll and Matt Hergis and some of the guys on the team. It was probably like the most, you know, the closest intimacy of like a Bible study at the time that I'd ever been a part of, and just some older guys and some younger guys and just some really cool conversations I remember, and some struggles shared, and just kind of some realness that maybe sometimes when it's surfacey and just kind of a chapel service, which, you know, Dylan really, you know, it's kind of more of a the chaplain talking to the players. This was more intimate and more conversational and more guys opening up. And so that was a good time for me as far as just growth. And like you talked about Russ, and I remember Russ had a Bible study and it was so over my head.
Oh, he's so smart.
And he had a lot of people in that study that were, and I was reading the book for the Bible study, and I remember a lot of times I'd have to read it 4 or 5 times just to understand it. But he was just such a teacher of, and it was so deep and like just explaining, and I remember it was really, really cool. I really enjoyed that time in our life with that church and a lot of the people that went to that church. But yeah, Colorado, I think, and part of the reason going back there in 2018 to kind of bookend my career, I think the excitement to go back there had a lot to do with how much we enjoyed it the first time around.
Oh, I loved it there. I loved it. And so, okay, I remember this specifically, moving on from Colorado. And so I remember we were leaving Coors Field, and I remember I looked in my rearview mirror and I saw Coors Field in my rearview mirror. And it was like the Holy Spirit said, yeah, you're out of here. And I remember you kind of had a similar experience. Like, we left the field and I knew in my soul that Dan O'Dowd was going to trade you. I knew it. And I love Dan O'Dowd. I love his kid. I can't wait to root for his kid at Vanderbilt. He's a great kid. And, but I was kind of mad at him at the time. And not only did he trade you, he traded you to Oakland. And I remember when you got that phone call, we pulled over and you threw up on the side of the road.
Well, I think anytime you get traded, I mean, I think that you build this sort of, I guess it's a mirage, that this vision or this theory that everybody's career is going to start and end in the same organization. And that I had seen it firsthand with Todd, and that Todd had spent his whole career in Colorado and thought that that was sort of my destiny as well, that's where I would be. And, you know, I was very comfortable in my role on the team, felt good about the young players in the organization. So we don't have to get into, you know, all the contractual things and negotiations that happened leading up to that point, but it got to the point where it looked like that potentially a trade was possible, and that I'd always held out hope that even if I got traded, that maybe I could sign back with the Rockies, or you know, that would ultimately be where I spent most of my career. At the time, that was. You know, like I said, you grow up in an organization, you see yourself there, you're comfortable there, all those things. And then one day, even if you think you're ready for it, when somebody tells you you're traded, I think anybody would tell you the first time you get traded, it's not that somebody else wants you, it's that somebody doesn't want you. And so you feel this kind of heaviness of, you know, I just got traded. I don't know anybody on this new team. I'm going into my free agent year. Don't know where I'm going to be a year from now. It's hard to get invested. Like, I'm one of those people that wants to be all in, 100% all in. And so you know, getting traded to Oakland, which had established, you know, is an established place where they kind of in and out, they don't really hold on to guys for a very long time. And so it was kind of a rough time, because, you know, at the time the Cardinals were also in the mix for the trade at that point, and was, I had some inside information that it was either going to be Oakland or St. Louis. And so was hoping that at the time that it would be the Cardinals. And like I said, it had nothing to do with anybody in Oakland organization. We just, you know, you felt like the Cardinals were winning organization. They had the greatest player in the game. They had just won a World Series a couple years before that. And so when Adele called and said, Dan wants to talk to you, I knew that I was traded, and then it's just, well, who is it? And so basically, when he told me it was Oakland, you know, it's kind of a disappointment, and hoping that it was St. Louis. And then the thought of going to a new place and not knowing anybody, and that, you know, those 10 years with the organization is over. And all those friends that we had and all those teammates that, you know, you felt like were brothers, that it was moving on. So that was a kick in the gut for sure. And something that kind of stuck with me for a while.
Yeah. And I think what's hard too about getting traded is it's like, you're not allowed back in the family anymore. Mm. And I think that's the thing that's so difficult, because as a player like you, and then you set the tone for my role as your wife and how we went about your career, is this was family, and we were going to do life with our teammates and their families like their family. And so when there's a trade that happens, when you're so heavily invested in an organization, it's kind of like it's so many layers of sadness and frustration, because you're like, man, I still want to be a part of this, and now I'm not allowed to be a part of this, and it's really, really hard. Because the thing about Colorado that's so special is they have the same guys that work the gate in when we grew up there were the same guys that were there in 2018 when we went back, and the gals, the ushers were the same gals, and the people that run the elevators, same gals, and it's just such a unique environment that we were really sad to not be a part of anymore. So we go to Oakland, and Oakland was difficult, like you said, because we didn't know anybody. It was in a league that we weren't familiar with. And it was a good experience. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was just different. Mm-hmm. And I think that the organization, you were very impressed with that. Very impressed with Billy Beane and his group and the way they went about business. I think looking back on it now, it was nice to see, just from a learning standpoint, like to see how creative they are with what they have, and how they approach the business is very unique. And obviously a lot of people have valued the way Billy Beane has gone about his work, and they've copied it. And so it was really cool, as far as like maybe a career path someday for you to be able to see how they did it there. So we've got the Rockies that are more, they have their approach to things. And then the A's, it was a lot different, but very unique. And you learned a lot and really have a lot of respect for Billy and the way that he runs his ship was cool. And so then you got traded to the Cardinals we got traded to the Cardinals in 2009, and that was awesome. And so let's talk about the Cardinals real quick.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when I got traded to the Cardinals, I guess,
or you know, 2008, I guess it was.
No,
2009. All right.
I like I said, we had moved close to July, the trade deadline. The young team that Billy had put together with a lot of veteran players surrounding a young core, I think he had planned on. It wasn't working out. We had a lot of injuries, and some of the young guys weren't quite there yet. And so the A's team, we weren't playing very well. And so it looked like, you know, I was going to be traded, but at the time they were still doing draft compensation in a different way. So it could have been, you know, as a free agent signing elsewhere, I would have been a first, and they'd have got a first and second round. Anyways, so it wasn't a guarantee that I was going to be traded, but rumblings were going on about St. Louis and so when we got that call in New York, that I'd been traded to the Cardinals, and the excitement of moving into a playoff run, which they were a really good team, and we were in New York, and as a family we were all there, and got the call in the morning, and basically they said they want you in Philadelphia to play that night's game. And thankfully New York and Philadelphia are just a train right away, so we jumped on a train as a family, which was a cool memory. I remember the excitement and everybody kind of packing their stuff and the kids kind of figuring out what was going on, and we got on the train and took the quick train ride to Philadelphia. One Suburban was going, taking me to the field. One Suburban was taking you guys to the hotel, and it was just kind of a whirlwind. I remember being in the car from the train to the field and got a call from CJ Cherry, who was the traveling secretary at the time, who was an amazing man and somebody that I grew to absolutely love, but at the time didn't know at all. And he said, you know, talking to me about logistics and when you get here, and he said, hey, somebody wants to talk to you. And Albert jumped on the phone, and Albert's like, hey, get your butt over here. You're batting fourth tonight. We can't wait to have you. And so the excitement's building that I'm going to play for the St. Louis Cardinals, this storied organization. And, you know, got there and basically jumped into a suit, and I didn't have any of my stuff. So I'm borrowing stuff from I use Albert's bat and Yadi's batting gloves and Todd Wellemeyer's cleats that were Adidas that had a pitching toe on them because he was the only guy who wore 14s. And so I'm collecting equipment to wear in that night's game, and then was able to go out and get four hits and contribute to a big win. And it was just really again, another snapshot of in my career that is very memorable and very detailed and how what a cool day that was. But yeah, so that was kind of the start of the Cardinals run where, you know, for the next 7+ years, we got a chance to play in a really cool city on a really awesome team and a really great organization that we basically grew from, you know, with our kids, you know, from 8 years in a kid's life is a long time. So, you know, that was the start of the Cardinals chapter of our lives.
Yeah, and I'd say from a faith perspective, the Rockies, it kind of was an opportunity for us to sort of be baby Christians, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like maybe baby toddlers. And then you kind of grow. And then our time in St. Louis was a place where we really matured. And we had a group of friends there that, man, we did life with. And we loved so very much. And the Wainwrights are some of our nearest and dearest, and that friendship between you and Adam was really fun for me to watch and see. And like you said, our kids, like we got over to St. Louis when Jackson was going to be in kindergarten, and Ethan was a little guy, and Grayson was a brand new baby, and we added Reed when we were in St. Louis, and our time in St. Louis was incredible. But I would say from a faith place, we really grew to more mature believers. And in 2015 was a fun year for me because, well, fun and hard. I would say good hard year for me because that was the year I decided to go back to school to pursue a degree in biblical studies. And so I remember you had a teammate and I was close with his wife and they were getting divorced. And we were at a dinner to say goodbye to her because she was about to leave St. Louis and go on. And it was really a moment for me that's when I knew that I needed to pursue ministry a little bit more seriously. And I remember watching her she was just kind of ashamed to talk about what was going on in her life with the Christian gals because she just didn't know if it was going to be acceptable or not. And I remember that really hurt my heart, and it felt like this thing in the deep part of my soul where I was like, man, this didn't feel right. Cause we do life with people, but as believers, like we are going to run into some times in our lives that are kind of messy. And it bothered me that the messiness couldn't come to Bible study. And it wasn't the leader's fault or anything like that. It was just sort of the culture of Christianity at that particular season in life. It's like, I felt like the messy stuff in life just wasn't allowed to be talked about in Bible study, and it bothered me. And so I remember I came home that night from that dinner and I told my friend Hannah, I said, I feel like God's calling me to ministry, but I need to go to school first because I just don't know if I know enough about Christianity. And so I started school in 2015, and good grief, it's been a long journey. I graduate in May, but I've had to take some semesters off and some time off over the years because of all of our kids and all of the moving and things. But St. Louis, to me, when I look back on those years, I'll just look back and am so grateful, but also really grateful that the Lord had cultivated this desire in my heart to learn more about Him and pursue ministry a little bit more consistently and seriously for me personally. And I know for you, you grew a lot too as a man that was running hard after the Lord with the guys on that team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that 7 years and like you talk about, a lot of teammates, some of the consistent ones, you know, Adam was there the whole time, but there was guys like Skip Schumacher and Blake Hawksworth and Jake Westbrook and I'm leaving some out, Chris Carpenter and guys, Matt Carpenter and the guys that are still there, Trevor Rosenthal, and just lots of cool times, Jason Hayward, Mark Reynolds. Like we had a lot of really cool nights in the hotels where we would sit around and we'd have a Bible study and then we'd sit around and order room service and play video games and just tease each other and watch football or whatever, or fantasy football. And just a lot of great times and a lot of great, and then, you know, Lance Berkman late in my career and his career in St. Mm-hmm. Louis. So just, yeah, like to, I don't know, we can go on and on about this, but St. Louis overall was tremendous. Got a chance to play in the playoffs a lot. We had a lot of success. We won a World Series. We lost another one. But just overall, great experience. And like you said, we met and then our experience with Cardinal Glennon and all of our friends that we made through those experiences and the, some of the growth and some of the just seeing how people handle difficult situations and things like that. So, like I said, we could be here all day talking about this.
I know. But. So we move on to the Yankees in 2017. And I think that's interesting. And I mean, again, we don't want to just keep going on and on, but we're in the Yankees in 2017. And it kind of happened in an interesting way because you're supposed to go to the Astros. And that was kind of done. And we went to bed the next morning. That didn't happen. And they signed Carlos Beltran. And so, or however that worked. And so anyway, Carlos goes there instead of you. And a couple weeks later, we find out that you're going to New York. And so New York was kind of quick. It was just a one-year deal. But I think that God's faithfulness over the years really helped prepare us for that time in New York. And that was a tough time, but I think that we learned a lot of valuable lessons during that year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, it didn't turn out like we had hoped. There was a lot of cool things and a lot of relationships with those guys that I really enjoyed the second half of the season, and getting sick and trying to figure out and navigate through the last 3 months in New York was tricky. Like I said, didn't go like the first 3 months, but yeah, so that was an interesting season of our life, and one that wasn't my favorite, but you could, like I said, God teaches us, I think, and there's wisdom to be had in every circumstance, and you know, you hope that you came out of it wiser and stronger and more focused and more, I guess, just leaning in on Him and trusting than ever before. So, not my favorite year, but you know that God doesn't say it's going to be perfect. And I think that when He talks about struggles and hard things, it's not if, it's when. And I think that in our lives, there's going to be hard things, and that's his promise. And but I think His promise is also that He is there with us in all those things. So that was a hard time, and then you know, ultimately I thought that could possibly be the end of my career, and but thankfully God gave us an opportunity to go back to Colorado and sort of fight my way back to the major leagues and kind of get to end it on a little bit of a different term.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I think one thing that again, like one of those stones I would place in the river is, and not to get emotional or anything like that, but watching you handle that adversity in 2017 was the hardest, best thing I've ever seen. And so it was hardest because I hated it. I hated that you were sick, and I hated to see the struggle, and it was a grind, and there's no reason to get into details, but it was absolutely the hardest thing either one of us have ever experienced, and we weren't prepared for it. And I think the things that we placed our security in prior to your not getting well was we learned real fast that wasn't enough, and that our security really did need to solely be in our relationship with Jesus. It just couldn't be in supplements and workouts and your amazing successful career over all of those years. And so it really did need to be in the Lord. But the thing that I really appreciate about you, Matt, and something that I've learned about you is that you're pretty much the toughest guy I know. And you have a quiet strength that I really admire. And I'm not like that. And so if that would have happened to me in 2017, if I would have gotten sick, I would have told everybody about it, because I would have wanted everyone to understand why I wasn't able to do the things that I did prior to the illness. And I would have wanted to build all these excuses, and I would have wanted Cashman and the Rock or the Yankees and everyone to know, well, hey, the reason I'm not playing well is because I can't feel my hands, and my vision isn't quite right, and I can't do this and I can't do that. But you didn't say a word. In fact, this might be the first time you publicly have ever talked about it. And I think for me, like as a wife watching that and then raising boys, I hit the jackpot. I mean, obviously you've lost your hair, so that didn't quite stay, but I hit the jackpot as far as being married to a man that, that just pursues Jesus seriously, and you don't have to tell everybody about it. And I love that. And I think another thing, like you have this big tattoo on your arm that says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." And I think Job 38 for me during those months or years actually of you not being well, that to me became my anthem, so to speak, because I had to really, and that was kind of the point of the beginning of why what we think about God really matters is we have to get to a place in our lives when we go through life and when we run into suffering that we really know that our posture as far as who God is and who we are. And like, where were you when you laid the foundations of the earth, Leslie? Tell me if you have understanding, because I was complaining constantly to the Lord, like, why in the world is this going on? This doesn't feel right. Why? We don't deserve this. We're awesome, you know, and all these things. And God's like, oh, no, where were you? You don't know. You don't have the authority to write your story. I do. And you need to just understand I'm with you. And I'm going to be with you through this. And I think, honestly, even though it really stunk, I think it was good for us in the end. Do you think that? I mean, do you think it was good? I mean, there's just things. And the other thing that Job said, too, is, like, he goes through all these things that are really hard. And in the end, he comes to this place where he positions God correctly, positions himself correctly. And he says, though you slay me, my hope is in you, and I know that my Redeemer lives. And there becomes this deep conviction in the life of Job where he's like, man, I know who you are, and I know who I am, and I know you live, and I know you're with me. And I think for me, those years of going through some gross things, that's where I'm at. I mean, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's things in life where you that shape your character and, like, really, I guess, it maybe opens your eyes to the real reality. Like, I think sometimes we live in these fantasy worlds where we just kind of live in our own little circle and everything's fine in our circle, so we're all good and everything's good. And it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know, I guess just the reality of, I don't know, the world and like where you want to spend eternity and how do you want to live your life and what impact you want to have outside of you're good at baseball. Like just, I guess, some of the selfish, like I said, just trying to live in this small little box and kind of keeping everything tight to yourself and that you think you can control things. And in reality, it's not true. And I think that sometimes I don't know how that works, but when God allows things to happen in our lives that are hard, you either can curl up in a ball and there was times when I did that, and there's, you know, or you can try to figure out what he's trying to teach you and how to shape you and what it looks like, I guess, to grow and to try to be stretched. And I think that was, I guess, probably the best thing that came out of it.
No doubt. And I think one of the things that our friend says is you can't take people where you haven't been yourself. And so now, like, you went back to Colorado and it was awesome. And there's guys on that team that are so stinking fun to watch, like Nolan and Trevor. And, oh, awesome. David Dahl was precious and you took care of him. And I love that team. I love watching those boys. But that was really, really fun. But now where you're coaching college baseball with your brother, and it's cool, and then we get to teach Bible study, which is really, really cool for us. But you can't take people where you haven't been yourself. And so what is it like after all the things that you've accomplished in your long career and going through the, I mean, you've played in All-Star games and World Series. I mean, you've accomplished things that you want to set out to accomplish as a pro athlete. Those are the dreams, and you've been able to do those things. But we've also experienced the lowest of lows. And as far as failure, and then obviously a health collapse didn't help, and there's been some hard things over the journey of baseball that we've experienced. And so now what is your perspective when you coach these young kids that are just so talented and awesome, and they've got all this time ahead of them, God willing? And so what would you say to that? What would you say when Don says that? Like, you can't take people where you haven't been yourself. Is that anything you consider when you consider coaching?
Well, I hope that I could help them slot their lives correctly. I mean, it's awesome to have discipline and enjoy, like, there's got to be, to play pro sport, there's got to be this kind of fine line of obsession and just like this where you really just, a lot, everything you do is kind of curtailed to trying to be the best version of you can be. But there's also this, you know, where you have to keep your life in order, right? Where it can't be, I want them to enjoy sort of the process, which I think sometimes was a struggle for me, was even in successes and times of great enjoyment. I didn't enjoy them like I wish I had, because I was so worried about the next play or the next big moment that I needed to come through on. So I'm trying to help them enjoy the process and try to slot their lives correctly. And some of them are stronger in their faith and try to encourage that and try to encourage them on how to align their lives that kind of matches up with what I've learned. Some of them are searching and don't know much about God, that you try to give them opportunities to come to Bible study or even just small conversations. And then, you know, some of them, you just keep loving on them. And, you know, if they have questions or they go through difficult times, you hope the way you treat them, they'll want to know more about how I can help them or what, you know, what has helped me. So it's just this, I guess it's kind of a dance of how to, you have all kinds of different kids and coming from different backgrounds and different places in their life and maturity levels and physicality levels, and coaching college kids that starts at 18 all the way to 22. There's a big difference in who they are as people, maturity, physical, you know, physicality. And so it's been a bit of a, you know, it's challenging. It's every day trying to teach different kids who have come from a totally different place, both mentally and physically, kind of some of the things that I've been learned and some of the things that I think are musts. And then there's some things that are, you hold loosely. And so that's kind of been my approach with these kids, is to love on them and teach them some fun, healthy sarcasm, which I think is good to kind of keep them in check. But know that I love them. And so that's my goal as a coach, is to help them, love on them when they need a little sarcastic kick in the pants. That's how I like to do it. So that's kind of my goal. And so far it's been a lot of fun. I like being around them and they bring good energy.
Yeah, I love it too. And they do bring good energy. It's been fun. I mean, I'm not a baseball coach, obviously, but I love watching you do that. It's fun for me. All right, I mean, we're at 53 minutes, so we might need to shut it down. They say that you really only get 3 minutes with people, and we've gone 50 past that.
Well, yeah, so they probably won't listen to any of this.
So. Yeah, so there was only one question I was going to ask that I haven't asked. I'm going to go ahead and do
seconds,
it. You've got a couple seconds to. What would old Matt Holliday say to young Matt Holliday?
I think I touched on it a little bit. Like, just live in the moment. And like enjoy like the successes of, you know, we won the World Series and I don't remember even enjoying it that much. Like, I was so worried about like the next day or
the next World Series.
Yeah. And or even, you know, just taking it in. I don't remember things like as vividly as I wished I had. Just cause I think I was just on to the next. And I think that living in the moment is something that I've learned, if nothing else, over the last 3 years. Of trying to simplify life and trying to keep things, I guess, just trying to live every day and be present, because it goes fast. It really does. It goes so fast. And to think that, you know, you're done playing. Like, you feel like it was yesterday when you started playing and now you're done playing. And when you're in the middle of it, sometimes it doesn't feel like that. You feel like it's a long grind, but I tell even the guys that I talk to, like Matt Carpenter and some of my friends in the major leagues, like, hey, man, it'll be over soon and you'll wish you had even the struggles. Like, you'll miss the struggles. You think you won't, you can't wait for it to be over when you're struggling. But when it's over, you miss those moments. And I think that that's something that I would tell me or any young player.
Yeah. I think what I would tell me is, first of all, don't dye your hair, because I had great hair and it was super curly and awesome. So that would be one bit of advice I would give young Leslie. Like, just go with it. You have great hair. Just keep it going. But now I don't even know what the original color was. And so that would be one thing I would say. And the other thing, I think I'm right there with you. I think as a young mom, man, I looked at Jackson on the way home from that flight last night. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's a big guy now. And he used to sit on my lap and go on planes. And so it just does. It goes by fast. So be present. And another thing I would say, and then we'll say goodbye here, is that as a real young gal, I wish that I would have learned earlier to learn how to live free. Meaning that, like God was serious when he sent Jesus to die on the cross. And he was serious when he said, I need you to, my burden is easy. And he was serious about that. So he really does want us to let him forgive us of our sins. And he really does want us to learn how to live free and learn how to live like a new creation. And I wish I would have learned that earlier. I think I carried around a lot of unnecessary shame and a lot of, like, just not thinking I was good enough to speak up for Jesus, because I was kind of a little bit of a renegade, so to speak, as a young gal. And I think that I'm sad about that. I think I wasted a lot of time worrying about those sorts of things. So anyway, that's it. I'm excited for what's next. We're going to do talk to, you said it at the very beginning of this thing when people were listening, we're going to do some playoff conversations, because playoff baseball is about to start and it's our favorite time of year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, hopefully people keep listening after this one.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to Table 40 with Matt and Leslie Holiday, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports intersecting with faith, check out sportsspectrum.com.